You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Unexpectedly heartfelt ukulele performance there from Iceland.
It's Eurovision on 95BFM with our European correspondent, Cameron Adams.
On this week's installation of Eurovision, I spoke to our European correspondent, Cameron Adams, about the war in Ukraine, elections throughout Europe and more. Here's that piece now. Can you give me an update on what's happened in the Ukrainian war in the past week, as well as some context on the Ukrainian counteroffensive?
Yeah, Ukraine launched a counteroffensive late last week in the region of Kharkiv, which led to quite a stunning rout of Russian forces. Ukraine has had a well-publicized counteroffensive planned in Kherson in the south of the country, which they launched a couple of weeks ago. This has caused a significant shift of experienced Russian forces and supplies to go south to defend Kherson, leaving an opening in the north. With this counterattack, it's been reported that Ukrainian forces have been able to take over 3,000 kilometers of territory, and in some places moving as far up as 70 kilometers from its initial lines a week ago. And according to the research organization, the Institute of the Study of War, that means that Ukraine has taken back more land than the Russians have taken since April. On the Russian side, this defeat has been called a, quote, military regrouping by the military, but it's led to a significant criticism from Russian analysts and commentators. Russia also responded with missile attacks on power plants in Kharkiv City on Sunday night and Monday, causing significant blackouts across the region, with power now mostly restored. While this is a significant achievement, analysts stress that this does not mean that Ukraine will instantly start winning the war. They have to defend the newly recovered territory, and Russia still holds 20% of the country. What this really does do, though, is to help change the narrative away from Ukraine only being able to defend against Russia, with Ukraine claiming that if they had more advanced weapons, they can take back even more territory. With a tough economic winter ahead, which would put pressure on its allies, it was critical for Ukraine to show that they have a chance at winning the war that's expected to go on well into next year. In terms of aid, the US announced a $675 million military aid package last week, with another $600 million package expected to be announced this week. Germany has faced heightened pressure to give Ukraine its more advanced Leopard 2 battle tanks to help with the war. However, Defense Minister Christine Lambrecht has rejected these calls. And the last operating reactor at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant has been shut down after repairs were made due to fears of fighting in the area. The International Atomic Energy Agency yesterday said that both Russia and Ukraine are interested in its proposal for a prediction zone to be cancelled around, to be created around the Russian-held plant.
There's been elections in Sweden over the weekend and it's been pretty close. Do we have a winner yet?
Not yet. However, it's looking like the right-wing bloc may have a razor-thin winning margin thanks to a surge in support for the far-right Swedish Democrats. With over 95% of votes being counted, there is a one-seat difference between the leading centre-right and centre-left blocs. On the centre-left, the incumbent Social Democrats, led by popular Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson, has received 30.5% of the votes. However, it's the far-right Swedish Democrats who are the biggest winners on the night, winning 20.6% of the vote. They've become Sweden's second-largest political party. The centre-right moderate party dropped to third place with 19.1%. The Swedish Democrats were formed in 1988, with early members being linked to the far-right and Swedish neo-Nazi scene. They've tried to shake off that association, entering parliament in 2010 with 5.6% of the vote. Leader Jimmy Åkesson in 2012 introduced a, quote, zero tolerance against racism and extremism stance in the party. However, they've kept a strong anti-immigrant stance, and one of their policies is to have zero new refugees and to lower their benefits to encourage current refugees in Sweden to leave, while also holding a more centrist economic view. According to a recent report by Swedish research company Acta Publica, 214 politicians of the Swedish Democrats were identified as expressing Nazism or racism. The rise in support for the party is linked with a rise in gang crime and anti-immigrant sentiment in the country, with gang crime being the most significant concern to voters. According to a 2021 report by the Swedish National Council for Crime Prevention, gun crime in Sweden is rising at a faster rate than anywhere else in Europe. There have been 47 deaths from shootings this year alone, more than all of last year's total. The Swedish Democrats have blamed the rise in crime due to a lack of integration in immigrant communities, with even Prime Minister Magdalena Andersson also stating that there have been failures with integration after launching new crime-fighting initiatives earlier this year. While Sweden took the most refugees per capita during the 2015 migrant crisis, Amnesty International has since been critical of the country over efforts to tighten immigration and refugee laws. Surprisingly, Sweden's efforts to join NATO played little part in the election, with fears of Russian interference in the election not eventuating. With postal and overseas votes still being counted, a result could potentially be out tomorrow. It would be up to the Swedish Democrats and the Moderate Party to form a coalition with two of the other smaller centre-right parties, and it would be the first time the Swedish Democrats would hold government. It's another case of a worrying rise in the far right across European democracies this year. In France, the far right Marie Le Pen came second in the presidential election in April. And in Italy, we've spoken about the upcoming elections, which will be held on the 25th of September, with the post-fascist, or quote, post-fascist Brothers of Italy currently leading the polls, along with another far right party, the League, coming in third place.
And moving over to Montenegro, elections might also be called there after its government failed a no-confidence vote. Could you tell us about what happened there?
Yeah, on August 20th, the minority government of Prime Minister Dritan Abuzovic collapsed after failing a 50-1 no-confidence vote in the 81-seat parliament. The vote was initiated by the Montenegrin president Milo Djukanovic of the opposition Democratic Party of Socialists. This is over an agreement signed between Abuzovic's government and the Serbian Orthodox Church. Critics claim the deal gave too much power to the church and risks increasing Serbian and Russian influence in the country. Montenegro gained a negotiated independence from Serbia in 2006. However, one third of its 600,000 inhabitants identify as ethnic Serbs, with the conservative Serbian Orthodox Church as their main religion. While Montenegro gained candidate status with the EU in 2010, progress joining the bloc has slowed due to, quote, tensions and mistrust between political actors, according to an EU report in 2021. However, it did join NATO in 2017. This political tension has led to a second no-confidence vote in the country this year. In February, the government of Zdravko Krivokovic was dissolved after failing the vote, and following accusations of corruption and undermining the results of the 2020 election. In 2020, the Democratic Party of Socialists was voted out after almost 30 years in power, after accusations of corruption, with Krivokovic's centre-right coalition gaining power. The second collapse of the government in Podgorica means Abuzovic's office lasted barely more than 100 days, with Abuzovic stating, quote, "We will be remembered as the government that lasted the shortest but made the most difficult decisions." The outgoing prime minister has since presented documentation to Montenegro's special prosecutor over information about tobacco smuggling, while there are fears that this current political paralysis could lead to a stalling of the judiciary system due to a lack of appointed judges. So, yeah, President Milo Djukanovic has until Monday to form a new coalition, or new elections may be called.
And Serbia has banned an upcoming pride parade for this weekend. What were the reasons that they gave for blocking it?
Serbian authorities have today sent out a last-minute ban of the Euro Pride parade from marching through the streets of Belgrade this Saturday. President Aleksandar Vučić earlier cancelled the event, claiming the risk of violence from far-right groups, as well as noting economic problems and tensions with Kosovo, while acknowledging that, quote, "this is a violation of minority rights," quote, the Serbian Interior Ministry today confirmed that the ban, citing security reasons, along with blocking a, quote, pro-family counter-protest. EuroPride is a week-long pride festival which has been held since 1992, rotating across different European cities. Pride parades in Belgrade have had a history of receiving violent action by the far right, with a pride parade in 2010 being attacked, resulting in significant riots and injuries. And in fact, I was in Belgrade in 2017 during the day of the pride parade there, and there was a very heavy police presence throughout the city. Thousands of right-wing and religious activists, along with pro-Putin bikers, marched through Belgrade on Sunday in opposition to the parade, with the head of the Serbian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Porfirić, telling the crowd, quote, "they want to desecrate the sanctity of marriage and family and impose an unnatural union as a substitution for marriage." The director of LGBT rights at Human Rights Watch, Graham Reed, has criticized the cancellation, stating, quote, "the Serbian government's minor decision to cancel EuroPride is a shameful surrender to an implicit sanctioning of bigotry and threats of unlawful violence," while the organizers of the Belgrade EuroPride say they will use all available legal means to overturn this decision.
And finally, the Venice Film Festival wrapped up over the weekend. Who were the winners and what can we look forward to being released?
Yeah, the Venice Film Festival ended on Sunday with filmmaker Laura Poitras winning the Golden Lion. Her film, All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, about America's opioid crisis, won Best Film, while the runner-up went to Alice Diop's Saint-Omer. Cate Blanchett and Colin Farrell won the Best Acting Awards, and Julianne Moore served as president of the competition's jury.
That was Eurovision with our European correspondent, Cameron Adams.
Macedonia with a reggae twist.
That was Eurovision on 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.